Latinos, the youth vote, suburban women. Campaigns stratify, then target groups of voters. What about disabled voters and their families, their caretakers? I'm Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. In September, Democratic candidate for president Hillary Clinton made an appeal. The Washington Post headline, Clinton makes an unusual push to win over disabled people and their families. Clinton described her plan as one geared to help a group of Americans who are too often invisible, overlooked, and undervalued. A group in Illinois has, for what's believed to be the first time, measured politicians at the state level on how they've handled policies affecting people with developmental disabilities. There's a scorecard that grades each legislator and the governor based on 10 bills that came up during the General Assembly spring session. The idea came to fruition thanks to Deb Hamilton, the suburban mother of a 27-year-old woman with developmental disabilities.
I was a teacher for 14 years, and then when she exited out of the school system when she was 21, we knew that we couldn't leave her alone, and she and we had strong feelings about her not living in a group home or a SILA. So I quit teaching to stay home with her.
Hamilton's reason for creating a disability-specific scorecard goes way back. Like so many residents, it's rooted in frustration with cases of shady and corrupt politicians.
It really, you know, even before I had a daughter with a developmental disability, I was born and raised here in Illinois. And I, when I was born, Otto Kerner was the governor. By the time I was old enough to take the Constitution test in eighth grade, he was in jail. And Governor Walker was governor when I learned to drive a car, and we know what happened to him. I was keenly aware of Illinois corruption, and I think the most fascinating story that was in the news, though, was when Paul Powell,
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State, thank you. When he died in Minnesota, and they found, and this was, I keenly remember this. I was 8 years old. I loved to read. I read the newspaper every morning. And to a kid, it was so concrete, cash inside of a shoebox, inside of a closet, inside of a hotel room in Springfield, in my state. That was a pretty concrete example of corruption at the state level. And I also remember that created some cognitive dissonance for me. I knew that my parents were hard-working, honest people. I knew that my friends' parents were honest and hardworking. And I felt I grew up knowing that there was such a thing as Midwestern, old-fashioned, you know, values, and that we were different than people in New York City or in Los Angeles. So I didn't understand that. Why, if there was so much hardworking, if there were so many hardworking, honest people surrounding me, why did I live in such a corrupt state?
Hamilton says after reading a report, she came to the conclusion that part of the problem is that, well, the state capital of Springfield is far from the state's population center, Chicago. Out of sheer distance, there's less media scrutiny and less voter engagement.
So that isolation, it explained so much for me, and it was such a relief. And then it changed my behavior. I thought, well, I'm not going to allow that distance. I live in the Chicago area. I'm not going to let that geographical distance interrupt what I know and how I influence policy. So I started getting more engaged. I kept myself aware. Even if I couldn't physically show up in Springfield, then I sought out ways to watch what was happening online and to, I started reading more Springfield-based news. And I really wanted to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. So that study really led to, it was a progression of thought, really. I had to know that what I'd been doing for advocacy all those years probably wasn't that effective. So then fast forward to April of this year. It was actually my daughter's 27th birthday. She and I, along with a few other iPad parents, were sitting down discussing our agenda with Senator Link in Gurnee. And it was a game changer of a conversation. We were trying to get him to discuss the specifics of the bills on our agenda, and he was trying to get us to see the bigger picture. And he said, "You could do a scorecard. Why aren't you doing a scorecard?" And my eyes got big because I had seen scorecards. I was aware of them. I thought it was somebody else's job. Turns out it was mine. And then he said, you need to have more social media presence. iPad had been for 10 years a closed Yahoo group, and it has been a fantastic experience. A lot of support there, a lot of information sharing. But we 2 weeks ago made the migration to Facebook. We now have a Facebook page. We have a website now. So, those things really needed to be done. We are completely 100% grassroots, which poses some challenges, but it also is a breath of fresh air. We don't have, there literally is not one thin dime. And when there's not money involved, there are no strings attached. So it's very freeing. We can pretty much say whatever is right from our philosophy and from our point of view. So
basically, I guess just to kind of sum this up, was it after speaking with Senator Link about this, and he said, you could do a scorecard, and you discovered, wow, that's something that you have the power, or perhaps you view it as a responsibility to do. What is, you think, the effect of a scorecard? Is it to influence legislators to say, hey, we've got an eye on you, or to better help make clear what the issues are facing adults with developmental disabilities and so their loved ones to a public at large?
It's all of those things and more. We are hoping, I am hoping, that that we can make parents and siblings and self-advocates, professionals, more aware also of what's happening in Springfield. It goes back to that capital isolation. I wanted to shorten that drive from our population base to Springfield. And so I'm hoping it will influence legislators' behavior. I'm hoping it will bring awareness to the specific cause itself, but also to create an awareness of what is really happening in Springfield. We found some. The scorecard revealed some pretty interesting data.
Let's get into that. Yeah.
Let's get into that.
Yeah.
I looked at as many scorecards as I could get my hands on, just to see how they were modeled. I was trying to figure out how to do this thing that I'd never done before, and it is unusual for scorecards to report the scores of a governor and also to separate the scores of leadership. And we felt strongly that, I mentioned that the fish rots from the head down, that things really are rotten here in Denmark. And we know that we have a stalemate. We know we have an impasse. We know the players involved. We know that there are just a handful of strong-willed people involved. So we wanted to show how those people voted and separate out that data. When you look at Rauner's score, for example, and Madigan's score, they were equal. They both scored poorly. They both scored 50% on the card.
Obviously, that's our top Republican and who many consider to be the top Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Right. Governor Rauner and Speaker of the House Madigan. And both of them, there was only one bill we opposed. Both of them supported that bill. Governor Rauner, in addition to that, vetoed four bills that we supported. And then Speaker Madigan just flat out failed to vote on four of the bills that we supported. So that's pretty dismal. I know that this has been an unusual year. We've had an unusual 2 years, almost going up on 2 years now here in Illinois. But we need more support than that, and people with developmental disabilities deserve more support than that.
About those scores, as Hamilton said, Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan each scored 50%. Not so hot. The Republican legislative leaders, Senator Christine Rodonio and Representative Jim Durkin, were each at 50% too. But the Democratic president of the Illinois Senate, John Cullerton, achieved a 90% score. When it comes to rank-and-file lawmakers, there's a very obvious split. The top scores were earned by Democrats. The bottom scores were all earned by Republicans. There is a bipartisan split when it comes to the mediocre scores. Remember, this legislative session was like no other, given that Illinois was in the midst of a budget impasse. No budget was there. Some of the bills Illinois parents of adults with developmental disabilities chose had a price tag. Often during session, Republicans voted against anything that had cost money. Does it come down to budget, or was it other issues where there's a different, you know, world perspective, or you see as perhaps a lack of support for those with developmental disabilities?
Well, things are very polarized right now. We don't have the moderate Republicans that we used to have to count on for support. One thing about the scorecard is it was very easy to get to a score of 40 or 50%. That was there were some bills in there that just weren't very contested at all. But of the ones that were contested, there was pretty polarized voting. There are some outliers. We do have some Democrats in scoring poorly and in the mediocre range. But that middle area where you would expect, we have the opposite of a bell curve is what we have, where you would expect, you know, most people would come together in the middle. We have a polarized situation. And I think that's probably true of politics in general.
What were the legislators scored on anyway? 10 bills, some the group liked and were signed into law, like ones that give Medicaid managed care clients some choice in care, another that makes it easier for wheelchair users getting the state to pay for replacement parts. Others Governor Bruce Rauner vetoed. Like a measure the organization supported, it would have given protections to the community care program and to elderly residents who receive state aid in getting care. I asked Hamilton to highlight the legislation that was most important to her.
It would have to be House Bill 5931, the DSP wages bill. Unless you're living the life, it's hard to understand this, but SILAs are experiencing a staffing crisis right now.
Community integrated living is what a SILA is.
Yes, and so it's the old, we used to call it a group home, but community living, and providers are having a hard time keeping staff. There's staff turnover. They are only able to pay them what the state dictates that they can pay them, and that starting wage is $9.35 an hour. So what's happening is employees are finding better paying jobs at Target and Walmart and McDonald's, and not able to continue to do the work that they love and the work that's necessary. So it's not uncommon for there to be 30% vacancy rates at a SILA. Other staff members are working overtime, which is, guess what? Expensive. it's really critical right now. And that bill would have given a living wage to the people working in the SILA, and also provided stability. It's really important for people with developmental disabilities to know from day to day that there is a routine, and part of that routine is the people that are with them, either their family members or people who are hired at the SILA. So that bill was really important to us. We lobbied hard, we campaigned hard, there were a lot of groups pulling together on that, and it was vetoed by the governor.
So a chance to push for it more in the veto session, that's something I expect that you're planning to do.
Yes.
How about another piece of legislation? There's one that would talk about a wait time for something called PUNS. What is that? Giving extra consideration to people who've been waiting a long time for services?
So there are 22,000 people with developmental disabilities in Illinois not receiving any services.
22,000.
22,000. And those people have been are on a list. It's called the PUNS list, and it's a priority of urgent need, I don't know, system maybe. It's what allows you to receive services, and it is a randomized, literally it's a lottery system. So people, you know, my daughter's name, for example, is on the PUNS list. We have no intention of, if she doesn't want to live in Ocilla, and we're healthy enough and able to care for her here at home, so that's what's happening now. But let's say she did want to live in Ocilla, and let's say she's been wanting that for 10 years, and she would have to wait for her name to be randomly drawn. She was 3 years old when I first heard that Illinois was using a randomized lottery system to service people with developmental disabilities. I almost fell out of my chair. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe that the state that I was born into, the state where I was educated and married, didn't apply more thought to that process, and also that they that there even were people waiting for services. So it's really common for parents to live into their 60s and 70s and still provide care. That's how it is in Illinois. Now, it's not that way in every state, and some states have no waiting list at all. Some states have short waiting lists. Illinois has just a pretty powerfully long waiting list. And we know that there are people out there who need services and can't get services. And the PUNS list is their being drawn from the PUNS list is their golden ticket to receiving services.
Just to be clear, when you said this is a list without any, it's a lottery system, so it's random, it does not take into consideration ability of family support. It does not take into consideration how severe somebody's needs are. And this legislation would have done what?
So individuals can get bumped to the top of the list if there is a family emergency. Let's say my husband died and I became too sick to care for my daughter and we didn't have any other family support, then there, in an emergency situation, there is some provision for that. What this legislation does is ask the state to consider how long a person has been languishing on the PUNS list when they make their decision. So it's not just about the age of the parents or the crisis level in the home, but also, you know, has the person been on the wait list for 20 years? Have they only been on the wait list for 1 year? What is that situation? So it now has to become a factor.
One more, the creation of tax-free savings accounts for people with disabilities that can ease the strain of education, housing, transportation, and other costs.
Let's talk about the ABLE Act, because the ABLE Act was a federal initiative, and so any state can put this into place, and Illinois is heading towards it. It's taking some time. I think there are three states, possibly four, where you can currently open up an ABLE account. It is very similar to a college savings account, and it's tax sheltered. So, for example, grandpa and grandma can fund the account to provide for some of the things that aren't provided for the state. A lot of people don't realize, but when a person enters Ocilla, the state does not buy their soap or their shampoo or their clothing or their bedding or pay for any of their snacks or recreation or any. It's just basically three hots and a cot. And sometimes families will set up an account to help to provide for some of those those extra things or some of those necessary things even. Illinois is marching very slowly towards that process, and that is one of our uncontested bills. I think everybody realizes, because it was a federal initiative, that it's something we should do, and that wasn't a really contested bill.
A final word from Hamilton, a teacher, a mother, on getting into legislative affairs, on developing this scorecard.
Choosing the bills, I will say that choosing the bills was one of the trickier parts of writing the scorecard. There were some bills that we were supporting that didn't make it out of committee, so that was, you know, that's always a disappointment. It is a process, and it's always in flux. And there were some bills that were out there that really didn't come into, you know, the radar screen until later in the process. So the harder part, and also the more subjective part of writing a scorecard is choosing those bills. I think we did a nice job choosing bills that some of them only affect people with developmental disabilities. Some of them affect other populations of people as well. That was definitely the for me anyway, the harder part. Once the votes are in, it's just a matter of doing the math and reporting the results. That part was easier.
You can find a copy of the scorecard at the Illinois Parents of Adults with Developmental Disabilities website. There's a link on our website. As an explanation of it says, quote, voting actions or inactions can have real-world consequences for vulnerable persons living in Illinois. I'm Amanda Vinicky.